Hello and welcome back to another Buffy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Kristen.
And we're going to geek out about Buffy. Today's episode is season one, episode seven, Angel. Kristen's favorite character.
Look, I have things to say.
I have things to say. So for anybody who has not seen it, as per usual, anybody who hasn't seen it or isn't following along, this is the episode where the Master sends the three after Buffy, which is a very short-lived plot line.
Very short-lived. It's like not even, it barely makes it to the cold open.
And Angel saves her, and then in their patching up, it's revealed that he's a vampire, and the whole episode's about Buffy coming to terms with the fact that the guy she loves, or that the guy that she likes, is a vampire.
Yeah, we're not to love yet. We've got a minute before love. Let's savor the moments while we have them.
Especially considering when Kendra shows up in season two, and I won't spoil who that is or what any of that is, but there's also a trio after her, and that's like a two-episode arc, whereas here it's literally one scene.
Like, I swear, it barely makes it to the credits. Like, they literally try to kill her one time, and instead of being like, you know what, we're gonna, now that we've seen what she's got, we're gonna try again, they just literally are like, we failed, we offer our lives as a payment, and then they just die. It's so weird.
Yeah.
We failed in our duty, and now our lives belong to you.
Pay attention, child. You are the anointed. And there is much you must learn.
With power comes responsibility.
True, they did fail. But also true, we who walk at night share a common bond. The taking of a life, I'm not talking about humans, of course, is a serious matter.
So you would spare them?
I am weary, and their deaths will bring me little joy.
And then has Darla kill them.
Yep.
Of course, sometimes a little is enough.
Which also, speaking of, this is equal parts of Darla episode.
Yes. And I do like that. I do like that part of it. You know what, too, is I always forget when I'm rewatching it how early she dies.
Yeah, every time.
It's always like, I get it in the plot, like, for plot reasons, why Angel had to, I mean, spoilers all around. I understand why Angel has to be the one to do it so he can sort of, like, prove himself a little bit to Buffy. But it is sort of, we don't really grasp the severity of that action for many moons to come. It's like, it's just sort of like, he killed a vampire for her. But we really learn how important that was, but not for several years.
Yeah, and I feel like that was not thought about now.
I agree. There's a couple things in this episode that are not really thought about. Because, like, given what we learn in later episodes, there, like, stuff in this episode becomes plot holes. Like, specifically the like, years that things happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because she says something very specifically about the last time that they were, like, together and, like, happy together was at the turn of the century.
Remember Budapest? Turn of the century? You were such a bad boy during that earthquake.
You did some damage yourself.
And we
know that that's
find
not
out
true.
That that's very not true because of the relative ages of two other vampires we've not met yet. So it's that kind of stuff where it's like, they obviously didn't know that they were going to be doing a lot of things with Darla and with Angel and with characters that come later. And so it's like, on the one hand, I wish that they had kind of, like, gone back and looked at these scripts and just been like cleaned up the years a little. But on the other hand, it's like, what are you going to do? It's a show from the 90s.
Yeah. They didn't know if this was going to get picked up.
Exactly.
And there's stuff like with Spike later on too, that he says, and his initial thing that kind of gets unwritten and uh-huh. when they go into the history. So yeah. I feel like, yeah, they definitely had like a loose, they're like, these vampires all knew each other and we have yeah. a rich story. But then when they finally got to write it, they're like, ooh, what if this? And someone went, well, we said in the episode 7, they're like, nah, forget that.
Directly contradicts previous information given.
They're like, nobody watched that. Don't worry about it. Which, to be fair, whenever I watch this episode, I always wonder, because since I didn't watch season 1 live,
mm-hmm.
I always wonder how I would have reacted to the Angel reveal live.
Ah.
Because now whenever I watch it, I'm always like, because I came in the middle of season 2 in the Angel
oh, I see.
Story arc, like when that kicked off.
Yeah.
And so I've always known. And so whenever I watch season 1, I always forget that she doesn't know. And so when the reveal yeah. happens, I'm like, oh, you don't know that?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious what it would be like watching it raw, like, oh my God, what? He's a vampire?
I am curious too, because I think I always forget what the first episode I ever saw was, but I'm certain it was one where I already knew that, like, yeah. where it's like already just known that he is a vampire. So yeah, I'm not sure either how I would have reacted. He is just like, I don't know, he's like too hot to be a person, so it's fine. There's no way.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. He's too hot to be a human person, and he also just like, nobody acts that suspicious if they're not yeah. hiding something. He's always just like creeping along behind her and like, I never said I was your friend. And it's just like, who are you trying to right. what are you trying to prove?
He also goes back into douchebag Angel at the end
he
of this
does.
Episode.
Yeah, he does.
Which we'll get to. But there was one thing that I wanted to talk about at the very top of this episode when the trio attacks her.
Yeah.
And it's this thing that they often do where they have her narrowly escape death by someone helping her. She always it's always like written that way where, she, you know, they grabbed her. And then they went in, and like it was an inch away from biting her neck. I was like, so if he hadn't shown up, she would have just died here?
Yeah.
And like part of me is like, this is horseshit. You're just writing this to like make this. But then also, it does play into the Fool's Love story.
Yeah. So it does. I think it plays into sort of the longevity of Buffy in general, because
right.
in more than one instance, there's the episode in season 3 with the. Oh God, what is that one even called? The one where Giles gets fired, essentially. There's multiple episodes where it's like, it's the point. The point is that she thinks on her feet and she has friends.
Right.
Like, that is why she's so successful, because she has not blocked herself off from living and, you know, being a girl and society the way that the Watchers Council wants her to be. Like, how they've yeah. done it to all the other girls who they've apparently just been going through, like, tissue paper right. up to this point. Where it's just, like, the way it sounds is kind of like there's not been a longer-lived Slayer than Buffy in, like, history. Which seems
right.
insane. But it's sort of the thing that I like the most about it is because you're right. In a lot of these moments, she would have just died if somebody weren't there. But that's the point, is that she has all these people who give a shit about her, and they're gonna help her get through it in ways that the previous Slayers would have just died.
Right, yeah.
Which and I it, love.
No, it's great. It's one of those things where I initially am upset, because even like when I see it in movies, I get upset. Like if a spear like goes an inch away from a head, and I'm like,
sure.
that was a little too close.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like they would have just died, and that would be the end of the movie. So I always get irritated. But in Buffy, I remind myself like that's the point of the
yeah.
story. Like she's existing this long because she has these people, and they, like you said, they have multiple episodes in 2
yeah.
and 3 and 4 where they kind of dive into it, especially that episode with Spike where he describes his Slayer's past.
Mm.
And you,
yeah,
and you
fool for
fully
love.
Get, yeah, that's, Fool for Love.
That's not till season 5, but it is my favorite episode of this series.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I
so
can't
good.
Wait till we get to it. Oh my God.
It's just going to
yeah.
be me. It's just going to be me. I'm going to put on a leather jacket and slick my hair back and then just be like reading all of Spike's lines. That's just what I'm going to do.
This show's just going to dissolve into us reading out
just, like,
the scripts.
Play acting. I have a website that has like all the dialogue from every episode. It's amazing.
Perfect. Let's do it. But yeah, that was just something that I realized here. Also, this is they brought back the Into Every Generation Is Born open in this episode. They skipped it the last two episodes.
In every generation, there is a chosen one. She alone will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. She is the Slayer.
I think it's sort of like how the New Girl intro is sometimes the long intro. I think it's just when they have like a sort of short episode. Yeah. If they're missing like 90 seconds worth of content, let's they just like that slap thing, that on the front. Because it's very, after like mid season two, it never happens again.
Ever, yeah. They're like, we're done. We have way too much content.
The thing that annoys me about that thing is that it's not even Giles's voice. Like, I wish it were Giles's voice, but it's this weird, it's like such an early 90s type VO of guy. Like VO guy, yeah, and he's just like, into every generation a Slayer is born.
You're all, who the fuck is
I'm
this?
Like, what is happening?
I would even dig it in every episode of the whole series if it was like always the, like they do in other shows, always the person that the episode was about. Like, it's Xander this episode, or it's Willow this episode.
Yeah.
That'd be so neat, because then you're like, ooh, this is going to be an episode about so-and-so.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that random VO guy, you're like, can we stop?
It's just so put on. It's just like, I don't even believe that that's that man's real voice. I know he's doing a voice, and it's so awkward.
Yeah. let's see, what else? So, basically, they fight the trio. They
it's
go a, back
yeah,
to
it's
Buffy.
It's also not a good name. The yeah. three. I'm just like,
it's like, can we come up with something else? Because what is it in season two? It's like
the order of Taraka.
Yeah. That sounds a lot more badass.
It's way better. And it's also like, it's not even that I mind like the and then a number, because on The Boys they're called the Seven, but that rolls off the tongue in a way that the three does not. It's like very, it's like the two ths in a row, it doesn't work. I don't like it.
But so they fight them off, and they go to Buffy's house. Buffy's mom sees Angel and is a little wigged out that Buffy has this college age, quote unquote, man.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, okay. Angel, this is my mom. Mom, this is Angel. We ran into each other on the way home.
Nice to meet you.
What do you do, Angel? He's a student. First year community college. Angel's been helping me with my history. You know, I've been toiling there. It's a little late for tutoring.
And then she patches up Angel. They make out. I think it's, it's
no,
this
they,
night that
they
make
out.
No, they
make out the second day.
Oh, right.
But it's also, this episode also, they really managed to age Buffy down with her hair.
Yeah,
like the way that they put her hair in this, so it looks even more ridiculous with like hot, tall, broad-shouldered David Boreanaz next to Sarah Michelle Gellar with like almost essentially pigtails in. Like,
yeah.
And so I do like that the juxtaposition of that is good, but it's also like almost the dumbest that Joyce ever is.
Yes,
which is very frustrating.
Which is like, oh, you're studying. I think it's best that he leaves.
Yeah. Like, well, and she also is just. Like, that part is almost, she's almost too savvy in that part, because you can see her eyeballing Angel, and it's like, well, I don't like this guy, and he's too old, and why are they being sneaky about it?
Right.
But then it's like, later with Darla, it just is like...
Hello?
Hi, I'm Darla, a friend of Buffy's.
Oh, nice to meet you.
She doesn't even look like a child. She looks like a grown woman. She doesn't look... Julie Benz is older than Sarah Michelle Gellar. There's no way that they, like, you know... And I know that I'm supposed to be suspending my disbelief, but it's also like, that's an adult woman in a Catholic schoolgirl outfit. That's a red flag.
Who Joyce has never met.
Never even heard of before.
It's always only Xander and Willow coming over for the past whatever. And then now it's all of a sudden this random person who says she's good and she just lets her in.
Yeah.
I mean, to her credit, she doesn't know vampires are a thing.
Of course.
Like, she wouldn't do this once she finds out.
No, but that's also one of my... Well, she does some pretty dumb shit after she knows, too. But that is one of my biggest complaints, is that I think... I wish that Joyce had known a lot sooner.
I guess I slipped and cut my neck on. The doctor said it looked like a barbecue fork. We don't have a barbecue fork.
you would know that you were grabbed from behind and bitten into.
And also, the, like, she's just in ecstasies over the, like, how good this school is.
Are you another doctor?
Oh, no, Mom, this is Mr. Giles.
The librarian from your school. What's he doing here?
I just came to pay my respects, wish you a speedy recovery.
Boy, the teachers really do care in this town.
You've literally only met Giles. This is the first time that you've met Giles. You don't know anything about these teachers. This is a public school in Southern right. California. I don't believe you can be that, like,
yeah.
you know, just totally gone for this
yeah.
place because you met one person.
I would be so sketched if a teacher, like, came to the hospital out of nowhere. I'm like, why are you here? This doesn't make any sense.
And that's something that I find really interesting about this early run of episodes. And because I think that it was a very deliberate choice. It feels like a very deliberate choice. But, like, not ever does anybody even consider that Giles has, like, a nefarious purpose whenever he's somewhere he shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like, by rights, he shouldn't be at the hospital, but they're never like, are you having an affair with Buffy?
Right.
Which is like, you know, why are you here with these children? How on earth did you hear about this kind of thing? That's right. never a question, which I think is actually kind of interesting. And I think it speaks to their relationship.
Yeah. Everybody doesn't question that, which yeah. is good. So, yeah, she goes to the hospital. And that's when... basically Buffy gets tricked into thinking Angel did it.
Yeah.
Which is also, I hate the imagery of him just like continuing to hold her with his face yeah. waiting for her to catch up. Like, you're just waiting right now. Like, put her down. What are you doing?
I want to talk about also the relative self-control of Angel versus every other vampire we ever meet.
Yes.
Because he has zero self-control. And every other, like Darla literally bit Joyce just so that there was fresh blood
right.
for Angel to be tempted by. And then he just can't help himself. He's like, he puts on his vamp face. He like almost bites her. And then he's just like looking longingly at Joyce's neck for like what feels like minutes.
Although I will admit that it does, and this speaks more to the story that happens later, but he's spent like the past 100 years eating rats.
Yeah.
And we get to see even in Angel the series, like when he had the opportunity, because he deprived himself of yeah. human blood for so long, he fed on a dead human or a dying human. Yeah, I mean,
that seems like a him problem that he shouldn't right. have overcome by now. It's been like 100 years since he got cursed. That feels like enough time to have come to grips with what you need to do. What, has he never been walking down the street and somebody like cut themselves?
Yes, yes.
You know?
No, for sure.
It's just why. Also, well, he goes to the hospital to get his blood. Is yeah, he yeah, not yeah. smelling bleeding people in the hospital? He has to have some self-control,
crazy, yeah.
but it's always like in the worst moments he's just like desperate to feed on humans. It's just
right.
very
well, and that's the problem I have in the scene itself, is he shouldn't be like, he's upset that Darla did this,
yeah,
and then he's holding her in a position that just purposefully, like, it's just blocked to enable this scene,
of course. Yeah, you're right. It's not very realistic, because even if he were tempted to bite Joyce and keep drinking her blood, I think he could have like laid her on the table or like laid her on the floor or something. Like, I know that he doesn't know her yet and he doesn't really care about her. I mean, he never really grows to care much for Joyce one way or the other, but it's just the type of thing that it doesn't. Like, you're right. Why are you just holding her like the Pietà? Like, do something. Like,
it's so irritating. I don't.
It's just not a very well framed shot. And like, you're right. It's just it's only to get to the moment where Buffy sees him. And then, like, some allegedly throws him out the front window.
Right. What was the course of action that took them to the front window?
Yeah, because they are in the back of the house. Did she, like,
they're
literally
at a door.
She, like, literally manhandle him through the house? Because it doesn't look like he jumped.
Right.
The way that he falls, it doesn't look like he jumped. I never noticed that before, but this time I was like, did she just drag him through the house and then bodily throw him through the window as opposed to going out either door?
Also, the door is open behind him.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Just, he could put her down and she could literally kick it. It's all, that whole scene is just for like.
It's a lot. It's just for the drama.
Yeah, it's just for the drama. I wouldn't even mind it as much if like Darla threw it in his hands and he like turned around and Darla happened to escape quickly and it was all just in this moment. But the fact that he's holding her for like 30 seconds.
So
you're like,
long.
What is...
Yeah, so long.
What are we doing?
And he's holding her in such an awkward manner. Yeah, it's we should get off this because it's not very interesting listening, but it is very frustrating.
Everybody's all, we get it.
It's not
next.
Very interesting watching either. So how about that?
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, then they go to the hospital and Buffy goes on a... rampage to kill
but first
Angel.
She changes her clothes and puts on her sparkly blue jacket.
You know, she's got to look good while she does
important. And she gets the crossbow, which she was not authorized to use at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, that's right. Which was a funny scene, her and Giles training, where he's like, you want to put your pads on? And he's like, actually thinks he's going to best
her. Quarterstaff. Yeah, right.
You show me good, steady progress with the quarterstaff. And in due course, we'll discuss the crossbow. Put on your pads.
Well, I'm not going to need pads to fight you.
And we'll see about that. Well, go on. Good. Let's move on to the crossbow.
She just kicks his ass. He's like, right. All right. Crossbow it is.
Oh, man. I love it.
But yeah, she changes her outfit, which the second main character in the show is the fashion of the show.
Of course.
So,
Xander's greenish thing. Xander wears greenish. A green thing in this. A green, like, button down, sort of. But it's, like, velvety.
Oh, yeah.
I dig that one. That's always one that stuck out. Brennan looks really good in green. I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so basically Darla's in Angel's ear, like, well, she's going to kill you now. You might as well join our dark side, which it's funny because, like, knowing where we are, you and I and anybody else who's already seen the series, knowing where Angel is at this point emotionally and mentally, that wouldn't turn him.
No.
But they do take advantage of the fact that you don't really know what it means that he's a vampire.
No, 100%, which I do like, because it's the type of thing, this storyline on the show is actually something that I love, because we are learning about what it means to be Angel specifically as the characters are learning it also. Like, we don't have more information than the characters, which can be very frustrating as a viewer if you know things that they don't, because sometimes that's just like, you know, it's very like a horror movie where it's like, why are you running up the stairs? Like, is that
don't
where you
kill him. He's got a soul.
Exactly. So I do like that part of it. But it is, you're right. It is also kind of like, well, what are we like, you know,
right?
When we find out more things later, you're just like, well, but what about that moment where, you know, also Darla changes her clothes too into like a red schoolgirl outfit. And then she brings guns, which I literally every time I forget that she has guns.
You don't think I came alone, do you?
I know I didn't.
Scary. Scarier.
I wrote that same note. I was just like, every time she pulls them out, I'm like, whoa.
What the fuck? She just has these two like crazy handguns. And Buffy just is there with her sad little crossbow. It's really alarming because I think it's like one of like four times in the series run when there are guns with bullets.
Yes.
Because we get some taser-ish guns and like electrical bolt guns. But these are the first guns. And then there are only like three more guns in seven seasons worth of the show. And so it's alarming every time it happens because it's such a human thing.
it's also such a, it takes you not necessarily out of the world, but it makes things more scary. Like, yeah. When she does it, it's like, oh shit. And then when a gun gets drawn in the finale of season two, you're like, oh my God. And then when the gun thing happens in season six, you're just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
When that comes in, you're just like, that's not magic. That's not demons.
What are we doing? Oh my God.
It's crazy how this thing that's in other shows and so common and like people getting shot or whatever, they're able to amplify it just by bullets. Like, it's not even crazy gun things. It's just the fact, just the presence of a gun is so much scarier in this world of demons and magic.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's part of why I like that it's so infrequent, because it does allow it to be a lot more intense. It's like, you know, by the time that we were watching the final season of, like, I don't know, Sons of Anarchy, I was like, well, everybody has four guns on their person. Who's going to be the first to draw? Like,
right.
It's just, you know, you're right, though, because you get kind of desensitized on a thing like that. So it's like, you know, at a certain point on that show, they can't just use guns to escalate the situation. They have to, like, burn someone in a pit. And I'm just like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, this is so intense and weird now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot. But I do also like, I think I mentioned last week in the episode we were watching, but I don't remember the context now, but I do like that appears, like, I feel like the commentary here is that is Darla's downfall, is that she has brought the increased violence to the scenario. And so because she is the one to bring that extra level of violence, she has to be the one who dies. And right. And I then the, like, extra betrayal of it being Angel that kills her is like, if it would be so poetic if we knew any of their history.
I know.
So it's
that's
like,
that's where it's
like watching it now. I'm like, oh my God, it's just like so intense, and it's so fraught and all this stuff. But I'm like, but you literally don't, you're not supposed to know that right now.
Right. And it's funny because that's why this show is so great as a loop. It's like, it's so great to continue to watch it, because the more you watch it, the more and more invested you get in these characters. Like, it's not just like, oh, here we go again. Like, every time you just fall more in love with each character. And having seen the Angel Darla story, both in their flashbacks and then also
on
playing
Angel.
Out on Angel, when you see that moment, it hits so much harder when she says Angel and, like, dies. Oh, you're just like, ooh, whereas the first time, you're just like, whatever, it's a fucking crazy vampire.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think Julie Benz is such a good, she fits in this world so well, and Darla is such a cool character. She's another one that, like, I wish a lot of the time that more characters had crossed over more onto Angel, but because of, like, the studio issues and stuff, they weren't able to. But I just, for the most part, enjoy everybody more on Angel.
Yeah.
Like, everybody who does go from Buffy to Angel, they get such better, like, such good arcs.
Yeah.
In a way that is like, why weren't you doing that on Buffy? And I guess it's because they weren't, like, main characters. So, but it's just like, we could have had it all.
Yeah. You took it away from us. And it might be also because Angel at its core, like, Buffy was Buffy, Xander, Willow, Giles. So you're starting off with four, and then they start adding people, whereas Angel was just Angel. Then
right.
It was Angel and Doyle, Angel, Doyle, and
Cordelia.
And then Angel and Cordelia, and a little bit of Wes. And then, like, eventually, like, they're building these people, so they were able to, like, really...
That's
whenever
true.
Someone was on, they're able to, like, really give it meat.
That's very true. That's actually a very interesting notion, because you're right. I think they really spent time in between characters. Like, they didn't introduce somebody, like, full time until we already had a handle on the people we had. And yeah, you're totally right. That's not something I've ever thought about before. But I think that might be why I like it so much, because in these early, you know, episodes of Buffy, we are splitting time between getting to know five characters, because Cordelia is not really a thing yet. So, like, these five characters are having to, you know, we're having to do, like, sort of shortcut work for all of them in a way that, you're right, we already have such a base for Angel and Cordelia on Angel. Yeah, wow. That's something I've really never thought about. And I'm like, I'm like processing it in real time. I love it. I love that idea.
Yes.
That's 100% right. I dig it.
I'm excited for when we inevitably cover Angel.
Yeah, same.
So much to talk about. And then in this final battle with Darla, before Darla shows up, Angel goes back to that douchebaggy Angel that we met in episodes 1 and 2.
When you become a vampire, the demon takes your body, but it doesn't get your soul.
Like the way he says it, like he's doing poetry, like slam poetry. I'm like, what are you?
Slam poetry.
Like, what is this?
No, you're totally right. He, like, the thing about Angel is that he has no confidence, so he's really not as good at the, like, poetic stuff as he is when he doesn't have a soul.
Yeah.
He's much, because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have any shame or dignity when he's soulless, so he's really able to get those things out and deliver them in a way that works, as opposed to this, which does not work. I definitely agree with you there too.
Which it might be all on purpose, because though his performance is Angelus on Buffy, and especially on Angel, on Angel is so good. Like, it's my favorite of his characters, and then watching him do this, I'm like, this, he's very capable. Yeah. He's obviously a talented actor. He's like led 5 very popular shows past hundreds of episodes.
100%. Like, it's very impressive. He certainly knows what he's good at.
Yeah. So I feel like this douchebaggy thing is a full force. It's just also so cringy to watch. Yeah. You're like, what are you doing? You want to stake him? You're like, well, I mean, I guess you're effective because you're trying to get yourself killed.
No, I definitely agree. This is also, I think, the first glimpse we've gotten of his, like, really, really pretentious apartment that just is, it's like half like one bed and a really sad fridge, and then the rest of it is like an art museum with just like artifacts in glass cases. And I'm like, if you're trying to not be suspicious, get rid of some of the artifacts and put a TV somewhere. Like, who do you think you are?
This is all very creepy.
He's just like, I just believe that he does just like sit around and look at his antiquities and read Sylvia Plath or something.
Oh my god, Angel.
I was I was very disappointed, because I think it's actually the Halloween episode in season 2, but I thought it was this episode that has one of my favorite Willow deliveries ever, and I'll talk about it again when we get there, but it was like when she was they were talking about how old Angel is, and I thought this was the one where she's like, gosh, even if he only went on 2 dates a year, that's like, and Buffy sort of cuts her off, and she just like looks at the table, whatever's there, and she goes, why do you think they call it a mace? Just to try to change the subject. So I was very disappointed that that wasn't this episode, because I was waiting for it in that moment, and then I realized I was wrong.
Willow is the best part of this show.
She's so good. And this, because she does have another good one in this, where she's just like, they're trying to talk about something about Angel, like they're reading something about him, and she's like, oh god, and when you thought he read your diary, but he really didn't, and then he felt the same way. And she's
like, I'm paying attention.
Never mind. It's very good.
And obviously Xander is very,
he's very put out.
He's very put out. He's very jealous. And then he's very like, well, now we can kill him. Now we can kill this guy that's a threat to me.
So here's one thing I'll give Xander, is that at least he is consistent. He has always wanted to get rid of Angel from minute one. He never stops feeling that way.
All right.
It's very consistent character-wise. I appreciate that about Xander. He is Old Faithful in that regard. Yeah. He always wants to get rid of Angel. He's always very black and white about vampires, even when he doesn't really have a reason to be anymore. But it is a reliable narrative at the very least.
Yeah. I think he doesn't even like, or he doesn't have much to do with Angel in the comics either. Like, even when he's come around with Spike.
No. Well, you know,
he and Angel are...
Angel's bloody stupid and his hair sticks straight up. I'm just not a fan. I'm not a fan of this flavor Angel. He's not my jam.
Angel on the... I do like Angel and Buffy for the arc in season 2.
Of course.
Because that's like what drew me into it. Yeah. And so I always have a soft spot in my heart just for this story, even though it's kind of soggy. I can't think of the right word, but like, it's just, it's not anything. I don't get excited about it. I just have like a soft place in my heart for it.
The
romance and his relationship with them in this show. I just have a soft spot.
I have nostalgia for it. I mean, as a woman who watched that season first as a young girl, like as a, you know, a young teenage girl, that's a very heady experience. Like your first love, it always feels so tragic and overblown. And you're always like, I'll never be without you. And it's, you know, us against the world forever. But as a grown person, I can still have the nostalgia for it because I understand what that felt like. But it all, and the arc is really good and the storytelling is really good, but it's also just like, it's so overwrought and melodramatic and boring to me at this point. Like, it just like, that's the part where I'm just like, no, I'm here for it while it's happening, but it's not my ideal type of relationship.
Right. It's, and like, you're just waiting for it to go, because Angel's personality in Angel the Series mm-hmm. is so much better than his personality here, which is just... But it's funny because this show sets up Broody Angel mm-hmm. that causes so many jokes in Angel the Series that I don't think you would get if they had to like spend a whole season with this Angel to, I feel like Angel the Series would never take off. So we luckily have this where Cordelia always cracks jokes about him brooding in the corner, which we never actually see a lot of in the show. They just always talk about it.
Well, he and Buffy are constantly just like mooning at each other, and it's just like, ugh. She's right. He's 224 years older than she is. He's had his soul again for 100 years. So even if you're shaving off all of the time that he was a literal monster, it's still, why are you not more emotionally mature than a 16-year-old girl? And he's just straight up not. He's just actively not more mature than her.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, I would say, it's weird that he, it's funny because, and this goes into major spoiler territory, but I don't know what how old he was when he was a vampire, but I think it was like 19 or 20, right?
I think so, yeah.
And so he was a very immature 19 or 20 year old. Right. Like, he acted like a child, and that's why he was kicked out of his house, and then he came back and he killed his family, and then he spent 100 some odd years as a monster doing nothing but killing.
Yeah.
Like, not growing and just becoming a world-renowned monster that everybody knew about. And then when he got his soul, he just lived in the sewers and ate rats for, like, 100 years.
Yeah.
So he has not matured at all, but he's also actively decided not to. Because, like you said, he did have 100 years to be like, okay, I'm going to become a better person.
I could do something with my life. Right. Like, he could, you know, even in Interview with the Vampire, Louis was only eating rats for like a couple of months, I think. And it's just like, he like nutted up and he got, you know, his shit back together and was like, I'm going to be okay. And he just sort of was okay. And I just don't, it doesn't really compute, especially with the Angel that we get to know.
Yeah.
That he would like, I mean, I guess it does.
It does. And it also plays into the story of, like, Buffy's the one that brought him out of this. Because we've all been there where we're just, like, miserable, whatever. I can't fathom doing it for 100 years.
Sure.
And it's also a little inconsistent because they showed him in, like, the 50s mm-hmm. and he was, like, in an apartment and decided not to be a hero. But then when he sees Buffy in that flashback, he's in the sewers. I'm like, what was that transition?
Yeah, also, it's like, aren't you bored with yourself? Like, aren't you just, like, tired of yourself eating rats in the sewer?
Staring at walls all day? Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Get a job as a bag boy.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't know. Ugh.
But it does lean itself toward Buffy being the thing and why he loves her so much, because seeing her is what brought him out of that rut.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term.
I have things to say about that at a later point too, because I actually don't believe he loves her that much.
Yeah.
It's a very unhealthy relationship, and it's very self-centered on both of their parts. Yeah. Like, neither of them cares about the other more than they care about, like, the tragedy of their romance.
Yeah, it is. Their whole relationship is about their romance. Yeah. It's not, you don't really see them connecting with each
other.
It's
like, that's exactly it. Because it's like, what do you have in common?
Nothing.
Like, I don't believe you have anything in common. What do you talk about? What do you like about each other? And it's just right. Like, you know, she's tiny and cute and he's tall and strong. And like, that's it.
That's like, it, yeah.
It's not a lot
they're
to hang on.
They're attracted to each other. They feel the lust. Yeah. And then they lose it quickly. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, well, we can make out. Like, that's all they've ever been, is just like this drawing force to each other.
Yeah. It's a very, that part reminds me a lot of Twilight, where it's just like, it's like 3.5 books of closed mouth kissing because his saliva is venomous. And then it's like straight to hard fucking on their honeymoon. And it's just like, whoa, pump the brakes.
I did not know that. That's hilarious.
There's a middle ground here.
You don't go from this to this.
It's like very, very bizarre.
That's funny.
Have you never, never read or watch Twilight?
I watched the first two movies, I think.
Mm, okay.
Because there was four or
there's
five?
There's five movies, yeah.
I think I watched the first two.
Okay. The last one is the best one.
I heard that's the one where they have like a flash forward, right?
Well, it's like a battle scene, sort of.
Yeah, and everybody dies or something. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
Spoilers for Twilight, sort of.
Someone told me all that, and I was laughing. Yeah. Apparently, a lot of people were mad.
Well, it was wild in the theater.
Yeah. But yeah, that's everything in this episode.
I will say it ends with one of the more iconic moments. Because they kiss again, and she's wearing that cross that he gave her. And it... The like physical logistics of it don't check out, but it burns a cross mark into his chest. It's just very romantic and poetic.
Were they like pushing their chests together? How did this happen?
It wouldn't. She's so much shorter than him. He wasn't like grasping her to him or anything. So
right.
It's not.
And the cross isn't
accurate.
That big either. Yeah.
It's not physically accurate, but it works on the poetry of the moment.
It's very poetic. Yeah, that's the one I made that poster of was
that's right, that's a good one.
And then bring Will commented, he was like, I understand that reference because it is such a
he's finally watched
it is so recognizable. But yeah, and I like the ending too, because I forgot that they immediately go back to like she accepts him, because I was like, oh, do we spend a couple episodes where they're like unsure? It's like, no, they're right back to
which is
lusting
nice.
After each other.
I'm glad we don't have to do that footwork, though. I'm glad that he just is, like, that he's still just, like, in this nebulous space for, like, most of the rest of the season. I enjoy that more than, you know, he has to, like, re-earn his keep or whatever. That would be so tedious.
They're like, we don't need to go down that road.
No.
I think that was everything, right?
Yeah.
This is all... That's also probably why they got rid of the trio, because they wanted to, like, spend so much time on telling this angel story.
Yeah. It is really just funny, though, because there's so many moments in this series where it's like, these are the most ferocious, you know, demon mercenaries that have ever existed, and they're dispatched within, like, 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's like the third scene. It's so insane. It does, what is interesting in this episode, as we close out, is the Anointed One finally has you realize the power balance between him and the Master, because the way he's shitting on Darla as the Master is like genuinely upset that Darla died, and he's like, she's a fucking useless piece of garbage.
How dare you? She was my favorite for 400 years.
She was weak. Don't need her. I'll bring you the Slayer.
If he was under the Master, the Master would just kill him and like be done with it.
I feel like it's not necessarily that he's like above the Master, but the Master needs him
in
order to get out. And that's what, you're right, that the power dynamic is actually pretty good. I still wish it weren't this weird kid and they're doing that bonkers thing to his voice, which is really bizarre, but it's fine.
I wouldn't even mind it being the kid if he did more. Like if there was more of this, because I think this is the last time he says anything. I think the rest of it, he's just sitting there, and then he leads Buffy in the end.
I think you're mostly right.
So I wish there was more to it, because they do put so much weight on who the Anointed One is a couple episodes ago.
Yep.
But, you know.
And he's just so inconsequential.
He's literally nothing. He is not anything.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I think that's this whole episode. And then we'll be back on for the next one, which is...
I think it's the robot one, finally.
Oh, yeah. We love that one. The classic.
That'll likely be a slightly shorter episode.
Yes. I robot you, Jane. Yeah. That'll be a nice 10-minute episode. Yeah. Although very Willow-centric.
It is very Willow. It's like the first Willow episode, really.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how we do with that one. But thanks everyone for listening.
Yep.
You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Trevor Carley.
And I am with my other podcast, mostly on at So I'm Watching.
You can rate, please. You can rate. Please rate, please, review, and please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you next time.
Yay. Bye.